Hi, I'm Sam. Welcome to my podcast, Medical Musings with Sam. This is all about living with chronic illness and finding the best way possible to live a life of faith and hope despite our diseases. Chronic illness is a part of our lives. It doesn't need to be all of our lives. That's the hope I want to give you as I share my story of a life that was turned upside down due to the diagnosis of a rare bone disease in 2014. My life today resembles nothing of what it was before. I was an executive manager living in the rat race, and I love that role. Today, I'm still living a fulfilled life. Different, yes, but so rewarding. I'm a writer, I'm a blogger, and I help people through my online support forum, Medical Musings with Friends. And if life wasn't busy enough, I'm now a podcaster. So grab a cuppa, find a comfy chair, and together, let's find life can still be full of wonderful and special moments. Hi everyone, welcome back to Medical Musings with Sam. Thank you so much for joining me today. I want to talk to you about a really important topic and a life-changing topic for both my husband and I, and that is Alzheimer's disease. We have just been given a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease for my husband, and as you can imagine, that has turned our life upside down. To a degree, it wasn't a complete surprise. I knew something was wrong and had known for quite some time. And in some regards, it's been a relief. And we feel very blessed that we have not had to wait too long to get a definite diagnosis, knowing that many people do for varying reasons. So this podcast episode is to tell you a little bit about our story, but also to talk about the realities of Alzheimer's disease, to talk about, I guess, how I want to do a bit of work around from a patient advocate perspective, or particularly a carer's side of it. Never thought I would be doing it on this subject, but I'm certainly don't want to push it under the carpet, and I don't want to ignore something so huge that I hope our experiences might help others perhaps be encouraged to not be afraid to look for a diagnosis, but also not be afraid to find ways to live with the diagnosis. So, yeah, I guess that's my starting goal. Very early days for us. So this is going to be very much a learning curve for me and I guess you as my listeners as we journey through this. And I'm sure some of you have much more experience than me because you have perhaps caring for loved ones, have seen loved ones go through it. Perhaps you have a form of dementia yourself. And I hope that together we might be able to wander through this whole new world, because it is a whole new world. So, yeah, I guess, where do I start? I wrote a blog post a while ago, a couple of years ago, called Let's Make Some Lemonade. And it was all based on that quote of, you know, when life gives you lemon, let's make lemonade. I got a cushion cover actually at Easter with that very quote on it. I absolutely love it. And so that's pretty much what's happening. You know, we've had some pretty hard lemons thrown at us, and we are looking at the fact that we need to make some lemonade out of this. And that's exactly what we are going to do. So you know that a few weeks ago, my husband ended up in hospital with what we thought was a suspected stroke. And then after numerous tests, including an MRI angiogram, stroke was ruled out, but he was told that he had short-term memory loss and wear and tear was showing on the MRI angiogram. I really could have told them that. It was becoming so obvious. We would have conversations and within 5 to 10 minutes, he just wouldn't remember them at all. And there was lots of other symptoms as well that were quite clearly pointing towards some kind of dementia. We didn't know whether it was just diabetes and the fact that, you know, if you get a hypo or a hyper, and given his age, that perhaps that was causing it. We didn't know that he's still being suspected of having TIAs, which are transient strokes or mini strokes. So, and that's very hard to diagnose, but his symptoms point to that as well. So that's still a possibility, but he's probably got both, if anything. Anyway, after numerous tests, as I said, you know, that's what he was told, short-term memory loss, wear and tear. But I couldn't get into the hospital just because of my own chronic disease and physical disability with that. But so I didn't have a chance to actually talk to the specialist, and I got a feeling that, well, one, I didn't think my husband was remembering everything that he was being told, and secondly, I didn't get a chance to talk to the doctor. But once I was able to view the actual MRA report and I did a little research, it was really apparent that the damaged area of the brain, it was a little more than wear and tear. In fact, what was really good though was the radiology department doctor had reviewed an MRI that he had had back in 2016. And that MRI was originally for a completely different issue. So it wasn't assessing the whole of the head, if you like, the whole of the brain. Had the reporting doctor at the time, though, looked at the scan a little more holistically, they would have known that my husband was already on the path towards Alzheimer's disease. Because the comparison between 2016 and the 2024 scan, which was done by the radiologist this time, the fact that she went back and she did look at that older scan, did actually show progression of the brain damage, and the brain was being damaged in an area that indicated Alzheimer's disease. So it's all around. Look, I won't go into huge medical detail here on the report because I'll probably just bore most of you. But basically, it's the widening of the temporal horn of the lateral ventricles, and it's all pronounced more around the temporal lobes, and that is all suggestive of dementia, Alzheimer's disease. I wasn't too worried because I read the report and I thought, okay, that's not good that that's all kind of being ignored or not being, I guess, definitely diagnosed as Alzheimer's disease when everything that I had researched pointed to that. And it wasn't just me. It was any allied health professional visiting our home could clearly see there was something wrong. Registered nurses who visit me could clearly see something was wrong. My own GP could, my other doctors could. It was just obvious that he wasn't who he used to be. And there were some specific symptoms that were clearly a sign of a little bit more than wear and tear. Anyway, so we have this teleconference, and on the day of the teleconference, and this is with the specialist from the hospital, and my husband was home by this time, so this was the follow-up teleconference, and we're very grateful that the doctor said he'd do it via teleconference because that made it a lot more easier for us. And my husband was feeling pretty good on the day, which was great. But the doctor was an hour late, which is absolutely fine. That happens with teleconferences. But that was enough for fatigue to really set in with my husband. It was the middle of the day. That is his dipping time. So in terms of fatigue levels or energy levels. So he was really feeling quite exhausted. And when that happens, he finds it hard to find words. His cognitive function is just deteriorates. His short-term memory loss is more severe, and he will just drop off pretty much, and you just can't wake him up. And he'll even do it while he's eating, which is really scary. So when we're having lunch together, I just have to keep an eye on him and make sure that when he's got food in his mouth or a coffee in his hand, that he will stay awake as much as possible, because I ask him to put it down and he just refuses to, and that's just because that's the nature of the disease. So the phone call ended up being a complete disaster. My husband couldn't remember words. He was fixated on a particular subject and he would not let it go. The phone was on speaker, so I could hear what was going on. And my husband wanted me to be there to support him, but we both agreed that it would be good for him to take control of the appointment and that I would just be there as moral support and also just to hear what was going on so that if there was anything we needed to remember, that I would be the memory, if you like. But I could hear that the doctor was finding the communication so difficult. And honestly, the whole thing was just painful to listen to. My husband couldn't find the right words. He was had the phone on speaker. He wanted it up next to his ear, which was making it harder to communicate anyway. And I just had to, I had to help out. So I quickly introduced myself and let the doctor know that my husband was struggling. Not that I needed him to know that because it was so obvious, but you know, I was trying to be as polite as possible. But I also decided that I wanted to be direct with my concerns. And I explained that we had been married for nearly 30 years. My husband's behavior was not normal for him. I explained a couple of key abnormalities, like he would have verbal aggression. He would fall asleep while eating. He would get states of confusion. He'd be unable to remember or find words. He had severe short-term memory loss. And I also needed the doctor to know that I needed to know what we were dealing with and that I didn't want to sweep anything under the carpet. And I explained that our family wanted to know as well. And we wanted to be able to care and support for my husband, give him the care and support that he needed. And to do that, it was important to have the correct diagnosis. And it was really important not to think that something was happening that wasn't happening either. I mean, how horrible if I was, you know, assuming that he had dementia and he didn't. That's not a nice thing either. So, you know, anyway, the important thing was, as soon as the doctor heard me say that, the words that he said next, they were as clear as a bell to both my husband and I. And he just came straight out and said, "It's early onset dementia, Alzheimer's disease, and you're absolutely right to not sweep it under the carpet, and you're doing absolutely right in the way you are approaching this and wanting to care for him." Honestly, I have never felt so relieved in my life to hear those words, even though it's the last thing I want my husband to have. But if he has it, I need to know. And so hearing that was just a weight off my shoulders, because we can now understand his behavior better as his symptoms are really definite. And not only that, I know that we're not, you know, it's not just a umbrella dementia thing. We're actually dealing with Alzheimer's. Like, to know that is really important because there are specific symptoms that are related to Alzheimer's. So I was just so relieved. And you know what? So was my husband. To hear it from a professional, he said that made a huge difference. Like, he knew that I had been suggesting it. And it's not that he didn't believe me, because he knows that I know what I'm talking about in general, because I do have time to do the research, and I do that for, because of the patient advocacy work that I do, and because of my blog and because of the podcast, I want to make sure that I'm factually correct on things. So he knows that it's not like me just to say something for the sake of it. But I understand that for this particular diagnosis, he needed to hear it from a professional, and he did. And you know, that has been key even for him to, I think, accept it even quicker than I thought he would. I'm not sure whether that's going to change, but he's doing pretty well. He's even letting me write letters for him when he goes to appointments. So I'm writing letters to the doctors explaining what's going on, what his diagnosis is, what I need them to do in terms of writing out a list of action items that he needs to complete post the appointment, etc. And my husband's really happy for me to do that. He's actually just at an appointment now, and I've sent him off with a letter. This is to an ENT because he's got trouble with his ears. And he just rang me, and I was in the middle of recording this podcast, and so that all went pear-shaped because the phone started ringing and I couldn't juggle the phone. And oh, anyway, so I'm re-recording this podcast. Anyway, but so I answered the phone and he said, he's never done this. He said, I'm 20 minutes late. And I did know that he went to get petrol first, which he shouldn't have. He should have just gone there. But anyway, that's okay. He's got his petrol, so that's good. But he said it wasn't because of the petrol. He said he got there, but he drove into the wrong car park and had to find the right car park. And so he did get there on time, but this is then what happened. And then he got into the building and he went onto the wrong floor and was wandering around that floor until he realized he was on the wrong floor and had to go onto the right floor. And by that time, he was 20 minutes late. Now, that is not like him at all. That is the disease. The fact that he rang me, though, that is a great sign. He was so apologetic that he had mucked up the podcast. But he said to me, you can use that as an example now. I thought, yeah, thanks, I will. Because it is a really good example of what he is like now as opposed to what he used to be like. And the really good thing I said to him was, well, I'm really glad that I wrote that letter for you. I said, because at least when you give it to the doctor, it'll explain why you were so late that she's seen two patients prior to you now. Yeah, so hopefully they've said it's all okay and she will still see him. So he's just sitting in the waiting room now waiting to be seen at her earliest convenience, I imagine. So that's what we're dealing with. But at least he rang me, so that was good and told me what was going on. So this is our life. This is how it is to a large degree. And then the funny bits, and I think, look, with anything in life, you've got to be able to laugh at things. But I think with Alzheimer's disease, there's also moments that are really not funny at all. And some of that is when he gets quite confused or he just can't remember the steps of how to do something or he gets verbally aggressive. He's not physically aggressive in any way, but he gets verbally aggressive and it's really awful. And I don't get it right. I know how to handle it. I know what I'm meant to do. And most times I try to do the right thing, which is just try and change the subject or walk away. But sometimes I'm so tired and I'm in so much pain and the things that come out of his mouth are so cruel and I know he doesn't mean it, but it's very hard not to react. And I've found some amazing resources through Alzheimer's Queensland and there's honestly, they're unbelievable. My husband has even read them himself and he's found them so helpful and he's just said, wow, this is just me completely in terms of what he is experiencing. So that's been super helpful, but it's also directed towards the carers and it's, again, been super helpful for me as well. And one of the things they said is, you will get it wrong and it's okay. It is okay to get it wrong. You can't possibly get it right all the time because it is just so hard and so complex. So I feel a lot better about that. But I just want to get it right in terms of how I react to things. And I'm working on that. I'm going to continue working on that because it's really important. So I will actually leave the link to that. So it's Alzheimer's Queensland resources. I'll leave the link to that on the podcast description and also the link to that blog that I wrote a little while ago called Let's Make Lemonade, because that's an important one, I think, in relation to this topic, even though it wasn't about this topic. So I'll do that as well. But you can find that on my blog, www.mymedmusings.com. So we have a whole new life ahead of us and I'm determined to not only stand by his side but to stay by his side. We're in this together. He's always supported me through thick and thin and he's still an amazing carer even though I'm also his carer. We care for each other. I'm the brains, he's the brawn and, you know, that's how it is. That's how it needs to work at this point in our lives. Are we going to have to make radical changes? Probably. We're probably going to both end up in some kind of tri-level care home, you know, retirement village. Then there's an intermediate and then there's the nursing home. So we've got to work all that through as to what that means for us and what that will look like. But we want to stay together. That's absolutely key for us. And We're also exhausted, and we really need a holiday away from medical things. We can't afford one. And honestly, even if we could, to move my husband to something that he's not familiar with is probably not the best idea, because routine is really important. And knowing where he's going, knowing what he's doing each day, all of those things. As soon as I take something away, or we try and do something unfamiliar, it can create chaos, and we need to avoid that as much as possible. So we are going to look at how to have a holiday at home, and I've raised this before because it's really important for anybody with debilitating chronic illness who do find it hard to travel, or find it hard, you know, even just to go 20 minutes down the road and stay somewhere nice, when there's a lot involved in getting yourself there, it's important to find other ways to do that. So I like the idea of holidaying at home. I've done this before, and these are my tips on doing it again. So, and if I did go away, I would generally only stay in the holiday apartment anyway. So I may as well stay in my own home in my own comfort. because our home does have every creature comfort that we could possibly need, and it's set up to assist me with my disabilities. It's really my own bed and breakfast. So, you know, I couldn't really ask for anything else. but it does involve a little bit of planning. And one of the plans, a few steps in that plan, is you've got to decide how long you're going to take, because that's important, because you've got to work out, okay, well, what's in my calendar, what can I cancel, what can't I cancel, those kind of things. And then you cancel all unnecessary appointments. Or if you find that the week you're looking at is just too full of appointments, then find another week and do it then. So just make sure that whatever you're doing, the week that you've planned or the days that you've planned, are days that you can comfortably have off. Let your close circle of friends know, because and family in particular, because they'll be worried about you. They care about you, and they generally will check in with you quite regularly to find out how you're doing. So you need to let them know that you're having a holiday at home. You might not answer the phone, but you'll text them every couple of days, perhaps, say, to just let them know that you're okay. You might want to plan some activities like reading or watching movies, or maybe going for some short walks, or time out in your electric power chair, or whatever it is that you do to mobilize. You might want to eat some good food, or perhaps get out to a local cafe or something like that. Or don't plan anything. It doesn't really matter what we do. If we have a plan and it works, great. If it doesn't, great. Doesn't matter. The whole idea is to dial down the stress and focus on anything relaxing and non-health related. The fun part is setting up your own bed and breakfast. So it's putting fresh linen on the bed and a nice bedspread, adding some extra cushions, a breakfast tray. And before you know it, you have yourself a beautiful bed and breakfast just as you like it. And it's comfortable because it's yours. So that's a really nice thing. And that's what we're going to do. It can change our mindset, and that's what's key. It can take us away from a life focused on illness and rehab and recovery. We need to step out of the medical world from time to time as far as we possibly can. So to have a physical, to have that break physically and mentally from traveling to medical appointments, from having to be a part of medical appointments, is really, really important. So if, like me, you are exhausted and you just have had enough of the merry-go-round, you're trying to get your head around a new diagnosis, whatever it might be, just consider shaking things up a little bit and just having that holiday at home. There's the comfort of your own bed. There's no packing or unpacking required. All your mobility aids are on hand. You've got your comfortable lounge or recliner. You've got your own TV. It's set up for how you want to watch it. And you've got all the food that you could possibly want in your fridge or freezer. And it's the stuff that you've ordered that you know you can eat. All of that points towards a very successful holiday. Don't you think? Well, have a think about it and have fun planning it. And above all, if life is a little overwhelming and you're exhausted, don't think for too long. Take some action. Book into your very own at-home bed and breakfast, and I'm sure it will make you feel just that little bit better. And if you are dealing with a really difficult diagnosis at the moment, please reach out. You know, I've said it before, I have a support forum for anybody who is a carer or who lives with their own disease, chronic disease, called Medical Musings with Friends. And you are more than welcome to join, and you will find the most amazing support from this amazing group of people globally as well, not just in Australia, right around the world. And yeah, I really would encourage you to come and join us. And it's private, it's a closed group, you're protected, and you can say exactly what it is that you need to say to get the support that you need from the most loveliest people. So please look after yourselves. We're going to try and look after us, and we are also going to do as much as we can to make this Alzheimer's journey as stress-free as possible. And we want to just be together as much as possible, just the two of us, because life is short. Our time together is vital, and we love each other so much, and I don't care what kind of disease is being pushed in our face, that love is going to remain, and our life together we are going to cling on to for as long as we possibly can. So take care, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I will no doubt be giving updates on the Alzheimer's journey, and I hope that as I learn, that I will help you learn as well. And if there are things that you think I'm missing, then please in the comments let me know. Or if there's any resources you've come across, I'd be really grateful to know. I'd be pointing in the right direction of those as well. So thanks for listening, everybody. Take care. Love you loads. And I will be back as soon as I can. Talk soon. Bye. If you enjoyed what you heard today, you can subscribe to this podcast or you can leave a review. I would really appreciate your support. If you would like to have more of my medical musings in your world on a regular basis, I also have a blog which you can find at www.mymedmusings.com. I post there at least weekly, so there's lots for you to read and be involved with. If you would really like to be a part of a nurturing community, Medical Musings with Friends is a private support group on Facebook, offering the hand of friendship, support, true care and understanding to anyone living with chronic illness. We would love to welcome you into our community. Just search Medical Musings with Friends on Facebook, click join, and you will receive the warmest of welcomes. I also have a book, My Medical Musings, a story of love, laughter, faith and hope living with a rare disease. It's available now through Amazon and my publisher, Imagine We Publishers. I would love for you to check it out. There's something in the My Medical Musings world for everyone. Something different to suit your needs. I hope you do find something that resonates with you and helps you feel you are not alone. Because you're not. Remember, chronic illness is a part of your life, not all of your life. Take care.